Ah, the things we've got to talk about in Chicago with the mayoral election less than 2 weeks away. Lori Lightfoot, Tony Preckwinkle, one debate, another debate, one forum, another forum. What's Tony doing? She's going negative. Why, Tony? Why are you going negative? Even if you lose, which you might, you'll still be chairman of the party. You'll still be president of the Cook County Board. Don't you want to get along? What are you doing? And now comes Chance the Rapper. This is desperation politics. And then here comes Chance the Rapper holding a news conference. And he said that people don't feel comfortable and safe in Chicago because of Lori Lightfoot. And he said her past record as a prosecutor, quote, hasn't been in the best interest of young black people in Chicago and hasn't been entirely truthful. Excuse me, Chance the Rapper?
I want everybody to know the truth. And the truth is that the most qualified person in terms of somebody that's going to look out for all the people of Chicago is Tony Preckwinkle. So I'm fully behind him.
Excuse me, Mr. Chance the Rapper. Isn't your dad Ken Bennett, who works for Tony Preckwinkle? And didn't you support Amara Enya in the last round? And didn't Lori Lightfoot basically tell Cass, and I'm sure others knew it, that Enya was in that race to take independent votes away from her so that she wouldn't get them because they knew that Tony Preckwinkle wouldn't get them? Come on, Chance the Rapper. Come on, man. There's a lot to talk about. That. We've got what happened on the west side. I was out on the west side with some friends of mine hanging on the corner. Oh, yeah. Hanging on the corner with men of commerce, with cars slowing down and rolling their windows down and staring at us, staring at them and staring at me. And it's March, so I'm thinking, you know what? I remember when a certain young reporter had his job saved. His name was John Cass. And how was his job saved? Six of the worst notorious killers in Chicago's history broke out of Cook County Jail. It's a story, but I'll tell it to you. Jeff Carlin is back in the studio, WGN studio, trying to make head or tails out of this and dropping in all that cool sound. And I'm here in the undisclosed location with the United States about ready to give up on the Electoral College, or so it seems. And we'll turn into, I think, first we'll have the Civil War, then we'll be the Hunger Games, and finally the toilet paper will go and we won't have anything to eat and we'll have to kill the zoo animals. And you're out there on the street and something's happening but really don't know what it is. Do you, Mr. Jones? Don't worry. I'm here. Jeff Carlin's here. You're on the Chicago Way on WGN Plus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Ten people surrounded me, indicating that they had firearms. And one person pulled him away from me, holding his waist, indicating that he would use a firearm against me.
You know, there's one thing I used to hate as a young reporter years ago. Every time, every year about, you know, when springtime comes, it starts getting warmer. Buds are on the trees. Little children want to play. Gangbangers are coming out with guns, blowing each other off the porches in the playgrounds. Kids getting shot. There'd be some cop who would turn and, like a grizzled veteran, kind of like my age now. Some guy looks just like me. I could look in the mirror, put a blue shirt on me. Maybe, you know, if I lost a few pounds and were in better shape. And they'd say, it's going to be a hell of a summer. It's going to be a terrible summer. God, I used to hate that. It's always going to be a terrible summer. And I used to think, is that just cop talk? You know, because every day is going to be bad. Kind of like reporter talk. Every politician lies to me, which they do, you know, kind of like that. And I was listening to WGN the other day, the Rokan show with Anna DeVellantis, and our friend, buddy Will Lee was on. He was telling this story. Story that basically was chilling. About officers making a drug arrest. After they made the arrest, a gathering crowd pressed on them. There were threats made. Police officer let the arrestee leave. Nobody displayed a weapon, but the arrestee knew that he had to let him go. And so after hearing that, I just had to know more. I had to investigate it myself. So I got in the car and drove down to the beautiful 4700 block of Gladys in the West Garfield Park neighborhood and ran into some people. A lot of people didn't want to talk to me. What are you doing here? I'm not disrespecting you. What are you doing here? I don't want to talk to you. Hey, I'm not disrespecting you. I'm not a police officer. I'm a reporter. It's one of those gray, misty mid-mornings. Chilly. Snow's all gone. Everything was drab. Everything was west side. Everything was beaten down. Sometime soon, you can expect there'll be somebody with a trowel and plants planting and putting flowers in, making things look nice. But now it has, just like every other place, city in the suburbs, everything's got that bleak, winter beat the hell out of me look. And there in the corner was a tiny pink bike. It's like the brightness, the pink brightness against the drab of everything, the mud. A tiny little bike, like a little baby's bike, maybe a four-year-old bike, like some four-year-old's little bike, kind of a tricycle. And as I was walking past it, guys were saying, hey, they weren't talking to me, they were talking to the two men down at the corner, kind of like letting them know that I was here, because like what, you couldn't see me? The white guy, the only white guy in the neighborhood walking by himself? I wasn't whistling or anything or acting weird, I just was walking. The other two guys on the corner just stood there, so I kept walking towards them. I wanted to hear what happened with that police officer. You know what struck me? I walked up to them, told them who I was. One of the guys said he knew who I was. They knew my, looked at my ID, and I said, what names, you know, are you going to be called here for this? And one guy said, call me John, and the other guy said, call me Cass, or Cash. And as soon as he said, call me Cash, the other guy who knew my name was John Cass kind of frowned and looked at him like, you screwed that up.
Hey, gentlemen. Give me a moment of your time. What? Want a moment of your time? I'm not selling tickets. Okay. I never heard of a story of a copper giving up. I never heard that. You ever hear that before?
A cop giving up?
Yeah. Giving up his arrestee,
yeah,
to a mob.
There wasn't no mob. They making the story more than what it was.
All right, what do you think happened?
It was a nice day. Of course, a lot of people gonna be outside. They saw the commotion. Who not gonna want to stop and see what's going on?
And so
they was whooping somebody. That's what I saw. I saw them whoop the man. Saw the man. He was just getting out the car. They get out. They twisted him and slammed the man on the ground. Cuffs on and everything. They slammed him on the ground.
All right,
they want you to investigate what's going on so they could come investigate even furthermore. That's what the police really want to happen. I'm not stupid.
So they want to make a thing? You say they want to make a thing to make a bigger deal.
They just want to get us as minorities off the corners.
As opposed to where? Where would you be if you weren't here?
I don't know where I'd be.
So you think it's all bullshit?
Definitely is.
Tell me why.
Because they all lie. They not just hot over here. They hide in every black neighborhood. Every African-American neighborhood they ride through. You go to the suburbs, they not sweating the suburbs like that. So,
definitely not.
So Caucasian.
You can ride all through downtown, all down there. They ain't doing nothing down there. We can cruise. Every time we come over here, we get terrorized. Everywhere. But this our hood. This is how we grew up right here.
I can't drive my car because of tent.
All right, so the story is
police officer, it sounds like a white guy, sounds like a kid, had two guys, a guy arrested, and then comes a group of angry African Americans, and they're all pissed off, and they're reaching.
You see two African American cops beating up a white guy. How you gonna feel in your neighborhood?
If I see two African American cops beat up a white guy in my neighborhood,
how you gonna feel?
I'm not gonna go start reaching for something.
No, I didn't reach for nothing. Okay, either. I got the
up. Right. That's what I do.
If they really want to lock that man, they really want to lock him up, they could have locked him up. They could have had him in a car and all that. They already had the cuffs on him. Why y'all didn't put him right in the car and been doing what y'all was doing? Y'all was being too aggressive in the first place.
So did you see that they were scared or something?
I don't know if they were scared. I just seen when the police grabbed him, man, he was already out the car. Like, what did he do? He got his hands up. They grabbed one hand, one officer grabbed one hand, put him behind his back.
Everybody know this guy? He's like the king of the neighborhood?
No, it was just somebody else.
He's not even over here, man.
That's the whole thing. Like, they got our neighborhood.
Was he visiting his girlfriend?
I don't know. What are you doing? He was in the car. He pulled in. They was chasing his car.
By the way, what are you guys doing here, standing on the corner? I gotta ask you.
I'm gonna go get me a cup of coffee. You see, I'm not leaving.
You guys aren't here for commerce or anything, are you?
Nah.
Like, who would come here?
I don't know. My homie got killed right here. I don't even like standing right here.
I'm sorry, sir.
Two of my friends got killed right here. That's why I don't be like standing right here. So
at this corner. Sorry.
But it happened in the streets of Chicago, only in the black neighborhoods, though, that the police as hard as they do.
What names do I use for you two?
John,
and you're Cash, right?
Yeah, Cash.
All right, awesome, man. Thank you for your time. All right,
thank you for your time.
Some police officers thought it was legit. Some thought it was not legit. I don't know yet. I think this needs some more investigation, but Anthony Guglielmi, who's the spokesman for Eddie Johnson, said that authorities saw the camera that it was on, that it happened the way they said it happened. Multiple times each day, Chicago police officers encounter dangerous and potentially unstable situations in the name of creating a safer neighborhood for all Chicagoans, he said. The department supports the officers' measured response to a situation that could have deteriorated and put lives at risk. Our message to the offender, we know where you are, and you will be held accountable for your actions. Anthony Guglielmi, Chief Communications Officer, Chicago Police Department. Yeah, they know who he is. They'll find him again. What would have happened if that police officer had shot his gun to keep the crowd off him, or pushed back, or someone pulled a gun and he shot one and his partner would have had to shoot one? You'd have two dead, a gun battle, and more people shot, more people screaming. You'd have reporters coming around, making snap judgments, or not even snap judgments, judgments from sitting inside the car or inside their safe offices with the carpeted floors. Maybe television and radio pundits would be talking too, just like print pundits. And we'd make announcements and say, you know, this should never have happened. Why didn't they wait? Well, they waited. They gave up their arrestee. I've never heard of that. That's kind of depressing, too, because that tells you where things are in this city. And all those stories when I was a kid in this business hearing, it's going to be a bad summer, and I thought, oh, shut up, Sarge. And now I hear it, and now I see it. Never thought I'd see such a thing, where a mob could make the Chicago police give up an arrestee. We don't know what's going to happen, do we?
Hot town, summer in the city. Back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around, people looking half dead. Walking on the sidewalk harder than a match there. But at night, it's a different world. Go out and find.
You know what gets me about that story? The one, college admission scandal. What gets me is there's so many people my age ripping on millennials, shaking their fingers at them. Like, you have to do this. You have to do that. You listen to me. This is what you should never forget. Pundits. And I'm thinking, okay, they could be morons or they could be smart people because they know that it's a click-tastic story and what they want is clicks. But have they forgotten what it's like to be young? What it's like to realize, finally, that there is no path that there's no old guy like some Yoda at the crossroads imparting wisdom, saying the left road will take you to riches, the right road will take you to a wife or death or battle. There is no Yoda, there is no path, it's just steps you take. When you're young, you have to learn that. And every step you take could be your last one. It happened to me at the Chicago Tribune. I was a young reporter then. And then Royko came over. And his people came over. And his people were close to him. And they were younger. They were his posse. And if you were gone from the Sun-Times, well, he just couldn't protect them then. So they came over. And I got pushed out. Before that, had front page stories every Sunday. Mark Eisman and myself. One a week, sometimes two. We broke in the Clarence McLean story about Harold Washington's top aide and a pimp, but that wasn't good enough. They called us in. We've got these Sun-Times people coming over, they said. And we can't keep you, they said. It would be immoral to keep you. Immoral. With all those Sun-Times reporters coming over. Immoral? There were two former New York Times editors. One we called Bluto. The other one didn't have a nickname. They were New York Times men. You know, they were all polished and in Valhalla. And they're looking down at the rest of us and looking at me like I was some street rat and they were going to step on him. Immoral to keep you, said the New York Times man, the editor at the Chicago Tribune. Not the editor, but the Metro editor, the Metropolitan editor. You can't write and you can't report. But if you get to the scene, we'll keep you for a couple of weeks, maybe a month or two. And if you get to the scene of the crime and get good quotes, we'll try to help you get a job at City News. Now, I always wanted to work at City News, but you go from City News to the Trib, not the other way around. That other way around thing was a career killer, and they knew it, but they didn't care. Because I wasn't theirs. I didn't belong to anybody. I didn't have clout. They were just going to get rid of me. Because it was immoral to keep me. And I was about, I wanted to punch them in the mouth, or the guts. I told my dad, and I was broken up, you know. I felt like I'd let him down. And he said, look, you're there. Your foot's in the door. That's all you wanted, right? Your foot in the door? Show them what you can do. So I didn't leave. I wouldn't go away. I just kept showing up for work. They thought I was going to quit, and they disappeared me, put me in the corner, you know, like hoping I'd die. No one gave me any assignments. I'd walk up to the city desk. Do you have anything for me? I'm ready. I can do something. I pestered them. I didn't care. I wanted to show them what I could do. There was no pride in that. They weren't going to hand me a story. Here's a nice story, John, and it's all thought out for you, and here are the quotes, and just write it up. And no, that wasn't my way, and that wasn't how it was set up for me. There was no help. There was no mentoring, advice, and hand-holding. And then it happened, March of 1984. I was about to be fired, and then six inmates, including some wearing prison guard uniforms and carrying guns, escaped from the maximum security cell block of the Cook County Jail. Yeah. And you know what happened? You need reporters when stuff like that happens, and you can't worry about their pedigree or who they know or who their friends are or what connections they have or what clout they have. Three were captured Friday night. One or two of them were captured in on Blue Island Avenue, just east of the, you know, the where the Italian restaurants are in Oakley. There was a bowling alley, and there was a vacant lot in the bowling alley, and they had pit bulls there, and I guess some of the prisoners made the mistake of wandering into the pit bull infested weedy lot, and the pit bulls found them. And I don't think they were ready to kill anybody. And then, you know, there was a guy named Reggie Mahaffey. Reggie Mahaffey was a murderer, psycho, killer. And his brother, Jerry, they killed the Chicago couple, the Pushels. They stabbed him, cut his throat, beat his wife, raped her, taking turns raping her, killed her, stabbed the son, beat the son with a baseball bat, thought they killed him too, a little boy, Ricky. I ended up writing about him years later. Here's what happened, though. There was a story, and there was chaos, and there were killers loose, and they needed reporters. So I went out on the story. There was no more, let's keep Cass in the bullpen, let's keep Cass in the corner, writing briefs. They wanted information. You need reporters for that. I went out to the west side, to Area 4, violent crimes. There was a detective there I knew. I didn't really know him. I kind of knew him, you know, like, hi, how are you type of thing. No friends or anything. He had seen me at a couple homicides on the south side and when he was there, and he did me a solid, and I wish I could remember his name because I'd like to thank him. Let me tell you what he did. I went there for information, you know, who knows what about these. Everyone's working the case, the jailbreak and so forth. I go up on the second floor, the detectives were there, and he points me to a seat and basically sign language says, sit down, you know, like, but didn't say it, just pointed to it, sit down, wait. So I waited. I waited for an hour. And then the door opens, and there's this guy coming out, a young African-American man, sniffling, tearful, afraid. And the detective comes out with him. Detective nods and then just goes right back inside, leaves the African-American man there, and he comes over to me. He's nervous, sniffling. He's not a street tough. He's kind of like a nice guy. Pleasant, not rough. But, of course, anybody can look not rough after spending an hour or two at Area 4 violent crimes when cops need to know what happened. And he says, do you have a smoke? The detective said you'd give me a smoke. And I looked and I said, yeah, I got a smoke for you. There were Winstons then, not Camels. Winstons. But he took it. He was that nervous. He had spent time being intensely questioned. And what was the questioning about? A story. That he was at a party the night before. And people were hanging out and, you know, getting high. And all of a sudden it came on the news that there was, you know, the jailbreak. And the killers are out there and these killers are loose. And they showed their pictures, and he looked at them, and then he looked at a guy he didn't know at the party, and it was that guy, one of the killers. And the killer comes up to him and says, the escaped inmate, and says, hey, let's go get some pizza. And he figured he had nowhere to go, and if he said anything, he would get killed. So he just went with him thinking he was going to get killed. And he told the story to the police. How they went and got pizza, didn't say anything. Just at the end, got slices. The guy said, you know who I am, don't you? And he said, no, I don't. What are you talking about? I don't know who you are. And he let him go. And the kid just took off and didn't go back to the party, I don't think. I don't remember that. What I do remember is they called me in after that and a couple other stories. They said, you know, the guys who said I couldn't write and couldn't report, well, they were at a table, and their bosses were behind them. And the big bosses said to the, you know, Bluto and the other guy who said it was immoral to keep me, the big bosses said, these two gentlemen have something to say to you. And I just sat there and looked at them. The one who said I couldn't write and couldn't report said, I'm wrong. I thought you couldn't write and report, but I'm wrong. I was wrong. And the other guy who said it would be immoral to keep me said he was wrong too. And the big boss behind him, managing editor, and the editor, Jim Squires, and the managing editor, Dick Ciccone, Dick was a decent man. And Dick said, now that you've heard that, Mr. Cass, are you willing to work at the Chicago Tribune? They had put this together, you know. They knew who I was. I mean, they knew what kind of guy I was. If there was anything I wanted, it wasn't money, it was an apology. And you know what? He said, are you ready to work at the Tribune? I said, you know what, Dick? I said, let me think about it. And I walked out. Thank God there weren't any cell phones, or he'd have called me on the cell phone immediately. I was outside smoking. And that's where he'd go. He knew where I was, so he walked outside too. And he said, you have to think about it? What kind of bullshit is that? I said, I do have to think about it. And he says, Dick said, have you thought about it long enough? And I said, yeah, I've thought about it long enough. He said, welcome back to the Chicago Tribune. I said, thanks, boss. For Jeff Carlin, WGN AM, executive producer of The Rokon Show with Anna DeVellantis. And for me, John Cass, husband, father, guy who walked out on Gladys the other day and just walked back into my own memory, telling you that story about Dick Ciccone and how I saved my job and how he saved it, and how that detective, I won't know his name, but man, I thank you for telling me just sit there. And that kid coming out, he said, the detective said you'd have some cigarettes for me. Do you have a cigarette? And for all of you out there listening to this, I just want to thank you again. There's less than 2 weeks to go, Chicago, before history is made one way or another. This has been the Chicago Way on WGN+.